Hello and welcome to the show. It's Wednesday the 28th of July. You're locked on and listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance FM 104.4. This week we're bringing you the usual mix of highlights from the Indie Media newswires from the UK and around the world. First up, Reclaim the Streets is back this summer with an RTS party and protest being planned this Saturday. That's Saturday the 31st of July in Edinburgh. Text on their website says, it's time to take back the streets of our city from the cars that have been swamping our streets, killing thousands of people every year and destroying our environment for far too long. It's time to take back our streets also from the Edinburgh Festival, a festival for the rich, where the poor, working class and homeless are pushed out of the way. And even in the case of homeless people, they're being pushed out of the city altogether in advance of the festival. For more information on this, check out the Edinburgh RTS website. That's www.edinburgh-rts.cjb.net. And meanwhile, this Friday in London sees the latest critical mass bicycle protest. Last month's ride attracted around 200 cyclists taking to the streets, and bizarrely, Westminster Council has told a pub, which many critical mass cyclists often use at the end of their ride, that it would have its licence withdrawn if it continued to serve critical mass people gathering outside. Anyway, the London Critical Mass is held on the last Friday of each month and meets at 6 p.m. on London's South Bank, just under Waterloo Bridge. And there's yet another Reclaim the Streets party planned for the summer. This one's going to be in Cardiff in Wales, and that's on Saturday the 21st of August.
Staying with the streets, new figures released this week by the Office of National Statistics reveal that greenhouse gas emissions from transport have risen by 47% since 1990, showing, campaigners say, the failure of successive governments to tackle the problems caused by road transport. Friends of the Earth warned this week that evidence suggests that the problems will only get worse, especially with government passing ahead with major new road building programmes. A government transport white paper, which was recently published, recognised that traffic levels in the UK would continue to grow and promised no immediate action to tackle this. The government's commitment to tackling emissions from transport was further undermined by the Chancellor's decision last Tuesday to postpone the proposed fuel tax rise, despite an acknowledgement that measures affecting the cost of fuel were one of the most cost-effective ways of reducing transport emissions. Friends of the Earth's senior transport campaigner, Tony Bosworth, said, "These figures reflect the sorry state of this government's policy on transport and climate change. Despite fine words and promises, they are failing to take the action needed to seriously tackle greenhouse gas emissions. Climate change means disaster for millions of people around the world, but our government is happy to let people carry on increasing pollution by getting in their cars."
Meanwhile, last week, a delegation of veteran road protesters visited the Department for Transport to deliver a letter stating that Labour's road building plans and even the planning process that leads to new roads will be met by protests similar to those of the 1990s. This was in response to the failure to scrap new road plans in last week's published 10-year transport plan. The delegation was comprised of a representative from each of the major road protests of the 1990s, when direct action dogged road building across the nation and increased the costs of road building by millions of pounds. Rebecca Lush, who exactly 11 years ago in 1993 was imprisoned for her part in the protests at the M3 through Twyford Down in Hampshire and co-founded the national organisation Road Alert, said, "The 10-year transport plan represented an opportunity to scrap the roads programme that Labour have been steadily building up by stealth. These new roads are a U-turn on promises Labour made when in opposition, when they accepted evidence that more roads create more traffic. Current road building plans will simply increase traffic and are in direct conflict with Labour's supposed commitments to protect the environment and combat climate change. They are starting to rival the Tories' old road building programme." The letter to Alistair Darling warns of future protests that would disrupt both the planning and building of new roads, and the delegation also presented Mr. Darling with a bicycle D-lock as a symbol of the road protests of the 1990s. Locks such as these were used by protesters to attach themselves to bulldozers in order to prevent road construction from taking place. Reading from the letter, Rebecca Lush continued, "During the 1990s, large-scale protests laid siege to road developments, leading to a major shift in transport policy. We are not prepared to let those gains be sacrificed. If you plan new road building, you should expect protests of the same commitment. The difference is that these protests will occur throughout the entire planning processes. We will not wait for the bulldozers to arrive this time. Protests will follow these roads every step of the way." The delegation included veterans from the following campaigns: Twyford Down, M3 Hampshire, the M11 Link Road London, Newbury Bypass, Stanworth Valley, the M65 Lancashire, Fairmile, A30 Devon, Salisbury Hill, A46 Bath, Oxleyswood London, Birmingham Northern Relief Road, Windmanham, the A11 Norfolk, Salisbury, the A36, Jesmond B Newcastle, Blackwood South Wales, as well as people from the following groups: Road Alert, Rising Tide, Reclaim the Streets and Earth First.
Staying on the same subject, a protest camp has been set up against the Weymouth Relief Road, a 6-kilometre-long, £25 million scheme that threatens to destroy one of the area's only remaining ancient woodlands. Celebrating government approval for the road, Dorset Council reckons that the development of a green park in the Lodmore Valley, actually an old landfill site, will help offset any environmental damage caused by the scheme. However, aware of the difficulty in justifying the road building project on environmental grounds, council bosses have chosen to promote the economic value of the scheme. They say that without the road, many local businesses will leave Weymouth, putting workers on the dole. However, spending £750,000 justifying the scheme in this way didn't stop the council's own consultants admitting that the companies they spoke to said that any plans to close or expand their businesses would not be influenced by the building of the road. One of the UK's rarest species, the Barbastelle bat, is known to live in the woods under threat. The animal is on the government's Biodiversity Action Plan list, which means there is already official concern about its potential extinction. Areas under threat if this road were to be built are extensive and include the Dorset Downs, Heaths and Coast Designated Area of Outstanding Natural Beauty, and Lawton Valley, which is a designated special site of scientific interest and which includes the ancient woodland. For more information on this and many of the other road campaigns currently going on and gearing up, see www.roadalert.org.uk.
Yes, I care if she brings me spring, but don't care about nothing. She brings the rain, oh yeah, she brings the rain. In the dawn of the silvery day, clouds seem to melt away. She brings the rain, oh yeah, she brings the rain. She brings the rain, it feels like spring. Magic mushrooms out of dreams. She brings the rain, oh yeah, she brings the rain. Cement of yellow, gray disappears, flying on the raven's wing. She brings the rain, oh yeah, she brings the rain. Yes, I care, she brings me spring, but don't care about nothing. She brings the rain, oh yeah, she brings the rain. She brings the rain, it feels like spring. Magic mushrooms out of things. She brings the rain, it feels like spring. She brings the rain, it feels like spring. She brings the rain, it feels like spring. She brings the rain. In the dawn of the silvery day, clouds seem to melt away. She brings the rain, oh yeah, she brings the rain. Oh yeah, she brings the rain. Oh yeah, she brings the rain. Oh yeah, she brings the rain.
This is an article produced at the last Dissent gathering in Bradford. Dissent is a network of groups and individuals taking actions against the G8 in Britain in 2005. The struggle against the globalisation of exploitation and capital means we're now in solidarity with the struggles of all the common people around the globe. Now the focus of the global bosses is the Olympic Games in Athens, Greece. The preparations for what is perhaps the biggest spectacle in the world are well underway. So far, national and international corporate media have largely focused on the construction, or not, of the Olympic venues. The social effects and consequences of the Games, however, remain largely unreported. Already, massive environmental damage has been caused, plus 19 workers have lost their lives in the so-called working accidents, while others at the Olympic venues' construction sites. At the same time, the Olympics have proven to be the perfect excuse for the Greek state to attack all the social groups who are in the margins. In fact, everyone refusing to participate in the corporate spectacle that the Olympics are.
Furthermore, stray animals, mainly dogs, cats and pigeons, in all four Olympic cities, are already being exterminated in order to clean and sterilise the cities ahead of the arrival of the Olympic delegates and athletes. A new Olympic prison is also being built near Athens. This is perhaps the strongest evidence for the repressive wave that will hit Greece in August. It is expected that the prison's inmates will include junkies, Roma and refugee populations, political activists, in fact anyone seen to be causing trouble or simply being in the way of the Olympics. During and after the Olympics, Athens will have something Orwellian about it. Over 1,000 surveillance cameras are being installed within Olympic venues and in another 283 public areas around the city. These are extraordinary numbers for a country where such cameras have only been introduced within the last few years. These cameras were supposedly installed temporarily and for traffic coordination purposes only. This, however, would not explain why most of them are installed in areas where demonstrations are expected to take place.
The Greek Minister of Public Order recently confirmed our fears that the cameras will stay after the Games. He stated that he would never order the removal of the cameras, adding that any minister who did so would have to face the consequences, as this surveillance network has cost a vast amount of money to the country and therefore has to be used in the post-Olympics era. Further, adding to the whole surveillance paranoia, he announced that during the Games, citizens will be able to dial a four-digit number, 1014, free of charge, in order to inform the authorities of any suspicious activities that they might become aware of. It is estimated that the security personnel present in Athens during the Games will be 40,000 to 80,000 strong. The Greek police and army, domestic and international services, and even NATO forces will be there. The first Olympic Games of the post-9/11 era will be the Games of surveillance, commercialism and state terrorism. Finally, the environmental destruction caused by the construction of venues for the Games is massive. The Olympic Village is being constructed on the slope of Mount Parnitha, eliminating part of forest in one of Athens' last green resorts. And at the same time, the canoeing venue is built in the area of Marathon, despite the fact that this is an area of global culture and historical heritage. The list is endless. The destruction of green space to allow for the construction of the ping pong venue in Galatsi, cutting down of 8,500 trees to allow for the expansion of roads, construction of an ultra-high voltage centre at the Mount of Emitos. The centre is being built 125 metres away from a local school.
Naturally, such suppressive plans and actions have been fiercely opposed by leftist and anarchist groups and individuals across the country. Amongst others, the campaign Anti-2004 at www.anti2004.net and numerous anarchist groups have taken on a number of actions, such as the Anti-2004 Anti-Authoritarian Festival, to show their disgust for the Games and all that they stand for. Bosses, multinationals, environmental destruction, state repression, opposition to the Games is strong and growing.
And, of course, it should be pointed out that alongside the Olympic Games is a massive anti-terrorism operation designed to protect the Games and the public from any terrorist attacks. However, like many of the large-scale demonstrations at things like the G8 summit or IMF and World Bank summits, this also crosses over into the state policing of any possible dissent and protest. And this is what people are going to be watching very closely in the run-up to the Olympic Games, to monitor the civil liberties and to see how paramilitary responses to terrorism are also employed against peaceful protesters.
Connection. policeman on the fiddle. He sold off the drugs to the man in the middle, who put it on a plane for Heathrow Central. It was picked up by a hippie in a Hertz car rental, drove it into town and split it up in parcels, sold it to his friends at an ethnic party. They talked about life but missed all the points, 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 points. They sat cross-legged and passed around the joints as they inhaled the West Indian export. They talked about life but missed all the points, 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 points.
Meanwhile back on the farm, we're still working hard. We've got deadlines to meet. We're rushed off our feet. We've got to wriggle on the beat. It takes 9 months to grow, and we've got to earn a living. But if the crops don't show, we're gonna starve. Bang goes another year's wages. Goodbye to life on the farm.
The Brazilian government has unexpectedly halted the demarcation of key territory belonging to the Arara Indians. The tribe, some of whom were only first contacted in 1987, are fighting for survival against waves of loggers, land speculators and settlers who have illegally invaded the territory. The Brazilian government started to physically map out the territory under national and international pressure, but due to protests from the invaders, it has suddenly halted this demarcation. If their land is not recognised and protected, as guaranteed by Brazil's constitution, the Arara face a grim future. Already thousands of hectares of their forest has been destroyed, making hunting and planting virtually impossible. The Arara live in constant fear of violence at the hands of outsiders and say they are now prisoners in their own land. For more, see www.survival-international.org.
At the end of last year, Camden tenants said no to a sell-off of their council houses. This was in spite of the council spending £500,000 of taxpayers' money in a publicity campaign to try and get a yes vote. Those opposing the sell-off held meetings, leafleted the local areas, and put up posters when they won. Camden Council, it seems, however, are poor losers. The council are pursuing one of the leaders of the No campaign through the courts for, quote, placing posters on a bus shelter by means of sticky brown tape. The poster advertising a campaign meeting last November might cost local resident and member of the local branch of Defend Council Housing, Alan Walter, £1,460 in fines and court costs if the council wins the case. This case has been seen as yet another attack on community activists for daring to stick their heads above the barricades and criticise our politicians.
And next up, a report from the Haiti Support Group. At the beginning of June 2004, workers sewing Levi jeans in a factory in northern Haiti were threatened by factory supervisors and beaten by soldiers. Following a one-day strike in mid-June, half of the total workforce, that's more than 350 workers who were working on Levi's jeans, were fired by the factory owners, Grupo M. With these dismissals, Grupo M has effectively smashed the newly formed trade union there. Since then, daily production quotas for the remaining workers have been doubled, and workers are now struggling to make $2 a day. Workers, of course, have the right to form unions there, but Levi Strauss and company, while agreeing in theory, in practice are actually allowing Grupo M to carry on with their union-busting activities. In support of the sacked workers, there's a demonstration at Levi's flagship store in London, that's Regent Street, tomorrow lunchtime. The demonstration has been called by the Haiti Supporters Group and the Battersea and Wandsworth Trade Union Council, and is supported by the No Sweat Campaign and the 1st of May Bataille Ouvrière Union Federation of Haiti. For more information on this, check out the website, which is www.haitisupport.gn.apc.org. I'll give you that again. It's www.haitisupport.gn.apc.org.
Just coming back, just have a comment. Levi's have a kind of international labour organisation policy where they very often say that they support independent unions and democracy. And then when the workers in their various factories around the world, i.e. Tarrant in Mexico, start to organise an independent union, they have often pulled out of the factories saying, oh, we can't have our jeans made here anymore because the international labour laws have been violated. And then they move to countries such as Haiti, which has some of the worst labour repression in the world, and China. So there we go, just to add a comment to that story.
Poverty, poverty, not my loomers are saying all day. Poverty, poverty, not gambler's too skinny to pay. Poverty, poverty, not keeping one eye on the clock. I know I can duckle when I hear my shuttle go. Poverty, poverty, not.
Up every morning at five, I wonder that we keep alive. Tired and yawning, another cold morning, it's back to the dreary old drive.
Poverty, poverty, not. My loom is a-saying all day. Poverty, poverty, not. Countless too skinny to pay. Poverty, poverty, not. Keeping one eye on the clock, I know I can duckle when I hear my shuttle go. Poverty, poverty, not.
Oh dear, we're going to be late. Gaffer is stood at the gate. We're out of pocket, our wages they'll dock it. We'll have to buy grub on the slate.
Poverty, poverty, not. My loom is a-saying all day. Poverty, poverty, not. Gaffer's too skinny to pay. Poverty, poverty, not. Keeping one eye on the clock, I know I can duckle when I hear my shuttle go. Poverty, poverty, not.
While all our wages they bring, we're often short of a string. While we are fetching with gaffer for snatching, we know to his prize he will cling.
Poverty, poverty, not. My loom is a-saying all day. Poverty, poverty, not. Gaffer's too skinny to pay. Poverty, poverty, not. Keeping one eye on the clock, I know I can duckle when I hear my shuttle go. Poverty, poverty, not.
Sometimes a shuttle flies out and gives some poor woman a glass. There she lies bleeding, but nobody's needing. Oh, who's going to carry her out?
Poverty, poverty, not. My loom is a-saying all day. Poverty, poverty, not. Gaffer's too skinny to pay. Poverty, poverty, not. Keeping one eye on the clock, I know I can duckle when I hear my shuttle go. Poverty, poverty, not.
Oh dear, my poor head, it sings. I should have woven three strings. Her threads are breaking and my back is aching. Oh dear, how I wish I had wings.
Poverty, poverty, not. My loom is a-saying all day. Poverty, poverty, not. Gaffer's too skinny to pay. Poverty, poverty, not. Keeping one eye on the clock, I know I can duckle when I hear my shuttle go. Poverty, poverty, not.
Poverty, poverty, not.
You're listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance FM 104.4. Your radical radio.
Some crazy news from America now. A couple who wore Love America, Hate Bush t-shirts to the President's 4th of July public appearance were taken away in handcuffs on trespassing charges. One of them, Nicola Rank, has now been fired from her job.
You couldn't make this stuff up. Well, tonight sees the 6th annual UK Big Brother Awards, the annual human rights spoof awards ceremony that lambasts the people and organisations that have done most to devastate our privacy and civil liberties. And of course, post 9/11, we are into very dark times in terms of civil liberties and privacy. This evening, awards will be presented for the worst public servant, the most invasive company, the most appalling project, and the most heinous government organisation, as well as a special lifetime Menace Award for the individual who's been fingered for being the worst threat to privacy and civil liberties in our times. Nominations for the awards include Margaret Hodge MP, Minister of State for Children, and companies including Lloyds TSB, British Gas, Vodafone, as well as the NHS National Programme for IT and the Citizen Information Project. Also, people up for awards include the Education Secretary Charles Clark. Oh, and there's a late entry for the Department of Transport. Well, next week we'll be bringing you the results and audio interviews from the awards this evening, and later today in the show we'll be playing you some street interviews on these subjects. For now, to see the nominations of the awards and to get the results in the next couple of days, check out the Privacy International website, and that's at www.privacyinternational.org.
Following the deaths last week at Harmondsworth and Dungavel removal centres, around 400 refugee and migrant detainees have been moved to other removal centres and mainstream prisons. In solidarity with those imprisoned, campaigners around the country are staging demonstrations this weekend. Protests are planned at removal centres and mainstream prisons to commemorate the needless deaths of migrants and asylum seekers, to show solidarity with detainees, and to demand an end to the policy of the indefinite detention of men women and children who are not accused of any crime. Protests are planned at Campsfield Removal Centre near Oxford, Dover Removal Centre, Liverpool Prison and Forest Bank Prison and Young Offenders Institute. For more information, see No One Is Illegal at www.noii.org.uk. That's www.noii.org.uk.
The consumer is in no position right now to lead the country out of recession.
We look at dollars coming out of one pocket of the institution going into the other pocket. The issue is larger than, are there dollars to educate our children? The issue is, do we want to educate our children?
Financial leprosy, we got to get up and wait in line for the soup, toilets, and things to read. Fill out 1101s and take a seat. But then we got to find a place to sleep. We got to lay down upon newspaper, cardboard, concrete, and plastic sheets. Effective aid for this policy. We used to buy full shopping carts and buy useless products. Drain the drain, not to remain redline economy. A halogen reality. Well, self-effacing and mirror-hating the ethnic notions and potions, but I still smell bad. Skin fader, tanning booths in conjunction with their plastic boobs and diet pills. All means to attract and distract. 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 Designer glasses to see designer clothes. Designer cologne to wave under a designer drug nose. That sniffs through the perfume scented magazines. Try to make sense out of dollars, often heard of, rarely seen. As an ear listens to the dial tone, I pretend to talk on a cellular phone that I know I can't afford. Well, I used to own this street, and now I'm living on Market Street. Well, self-effacing and mirror-hating the ethnic notions and potions, but I still smell bad. Skin fader, tanning booths in conjunction with their plastic boobs and diet pills. All means to attract and distract. All means to attract and distract. All means to attract and distract. All means to attract and distract.
Narco gangsters concern us all. And we will need speed and bass. Bass.
It's a matter of priorities when in California 42% of the kids in CYA are African American and we're about 8% of the population. It's a priority when 40% of those in adult corrections are African American.
Things generating revenue, lottery, poverty tax, drug lords and landlords, and praise the Lord, they prey upon us. How did they ever manufacture consent? A meal in every trash can, myth of the happy hobo, COINTELPRO, the coffee show. Why did they cut the Pell Grants so they can build cells? 10 years in prison, but no tenure at the university. Is this ethnic diversity? Or is it public policy?
The ones who need education the most are not getting it.
Chemical bullets aimed at the Afro diaspora. A genocidal ghost manipulates a suicidal host. And his high technology eliminates the need for manual labor. And Mercedes-Benz logos replace peace signs on the necks of our youth. They go self-effacing and mirror-hating the ethnic notions and potions, but I still smell bad. Skin fader, tanning booths in conjunction with their plastic booms and diet pills. All means means to attract and distract. All means to attract and distract. All means to attract and distract. All means to attract and distract.
The poverty industry. The poverty industry. They can find $750,000 a week to pay police, but we can't pay community-based organizations for after-school activities. The poverty industry. The poverty industry.
This is a report from the latest issue of Schnews. This week, building firm Montpellier pulled out of the contract to build a new vivisection laboratory at Oxford University. The campaign against the building hailed this as a victory. A spokesperson for the Speak campaign said, "It is refreshing to see a company take a decision based on ethical considerations rather than profit margins." This event has been widely reported in the media as a simple case of animal rights versus science. Such simplistic, lazy journalism, painting animal rights activists as anti-science, ignores the fact that there are plenty of scientists who believe that experimenting in animals is not the best way to find cures for human diseases. The lab in Oxford is a replacement for the abandoned centre that was to be built in Cambridge. There was a public inquiry for this centre, and the inspector concluded that Cambridge University couldn't prove any benefit from vivisection. Once again, all references in the media to the Cambridge lab referred to how it was going to save human lives by studying primates.
There has been a lot of misinformation spread regarding the lab in Oxford. For example, the lab was originally promoted as an animal holding centre where no experiments would happen, which turned out to be a lie. This error was handily repeated for weeks by the local press, and Oxford City Council seemed to have a block on the lab as well. Mysteriously, the planning application detailing the plans for the new centre disappeared off their website for 3 months due to technical problems. The only planning application that suffered these problems. And the police have been doing their best as ever to harass protesters, arresting people for handing out leaflets, filming everyone and getting the helicopter out to hover for hours over a peaceful demo consisting of 15 people. And we thought the police were short of resources. The worst behaviour of the police was over their treatment of a disabled woman who, after taunts from builders that she benefited from vivisection, showed them the hump on her back and explained that it was medical drugs that had caused her condition. The police then arrested her for showing her deformed back in public. Still, this is not enough for the animal abusers who think the police are going far enough with their harassment. The Association for the British Pharmaceutical Industry wants a single piece of legislation to address the issue of animal terrorism. But the government has been busy trying to stamp down on animal rights activities and in March set up the National Extremism Tactical Coordination Unit to target animal rights. Activists and eco-warriors, apparently security chiefs, have also identified Fathers for Justice as a threat to be dealt with as well, and supposedly the unit will also eventually be used to coordinate investigations into other forms of extremist behaviour such as racial attacks.
Where are we?
Won't be long now.
almost out of time. Just one last item. As you've probably heard, over 1 million people in Darfur in the Sudan have fled their homes from the genocide being committed by the Sudanese government and their troops and other militia groups. While the international community is dragging its feet, thousands are being killed, raped, kidnapped, bombed, displaced, starved and burned. This afternoon there has been a protest outside of the Sudanese embassy. That's at Cleveland Row off Pall Mall. So that's ongoing now. So just enough time to say goodbye from us. We'll be back next week, as said, with reports from this evening's Big Brother's Privacy Awards.
And we have some audio now, gathered some interviews on the streets with random people in bars and cafes around central London, and asking them what they thought about ID cards, and just inquired if they knew about the government consultation process for the situation of giving us all little bits of plastic around to carry around with us and identify who we are. So enjoy those and listen next week. Bye-bye.
I'm about to go out and talk to lots of people about whether they like the idea of having to carry ID cards.
What do you think about ID cards? Do you think ID cards should be introduced? What's your opinion on them? Like the compulsory carrying of them?
It's complicated. I don't think it is as simple as yes or no, because we're at a point now where there are forms of ID in existence and there are forms of ID in Europe, and it's I don't personally agree with one or want to carry one around all the time.
Do you know about the consultation process that's currently in place?
To do with ID cards?
Yeah.
Not with the public, no.
There is actually a required to pay £16. Do you think that's fair?
No.
And you can actually download the form free off the internet, but I've had problems, and the deadline is Tuesday the 20th of July, so do you think it's going to be a good consultation process?
No.
But if you knew it was going ahead, would you think it's important enough to take part?
Yes, yeah. It should be. It should be more public. And more accessible, because I didn't know it was going on.
What do you think about ID cards in general?
In general, I think the state already has much information, personal information about me, you know, credit. It's all there, isn't it, in public domain somewhere, or private domain, I don't know. So I have no real problem with ID